Hello, this is John Shane with another podcast for The Mirror. Mudra of Samaya, renewing the bond of deep sacred trust. John Shane. In 1987 and 1988, and also later in 1991, I travelled around the world with Chogyal Namkhai Norbu. And wherever we went, I carried with me in a heavy-duty suitcase a Sony 8mm video camera, boxes of video cassettes, a small external video monitor, microphones, and a VCR, as well as other equipment that I used for recording and on-the-spot editing. But while I did occasionally shoot video of Norbu Rinpoche when he was giving teachings, the responsibility for recording the teachings was mainly taken by others, and I mainly used my camera to record what we did when Rinpoche wasn't teaching. The videotapes I shot in those years have been digitized, and during the last few months here at my studio in London, I've been viewing the files of the footage I shot as we travelled from country to country. And as I watched the videos, I made screenshots and wrote notes to help me recall what's in each digital file. Looking at the screenshots after I'd made them, one thing I couldn't help but notice was how playful Rinpoche always was, whatever we were doing and wherever we were in the world. No matter what country we were in, no matter who we met, Rinpoche would always find some game to play, some trick to show us, some song to sing, some joke to tell, or some improbable adventure on which to lead us. Norbu Rinpoche was, of course, a profoundly serious person in every way. But as I viewed the videos from our travels over and over again while taking screenshots from them, the thought came to me that Rinpoche's seriousness and the playfulness that I was noticing when I watched the videos were actually inseparable, and that his extraordinary playfulness was actually the outer aspect of his profound inner seriousness. Watching him laughing and joking in so many of the videos as he engaged with so many different people in so many different circumstances, I began to feel that it was the profundity of his inner seriousness that enabled him to carry out every outer activity so playfully. It occurred to me then that what gave Rinpoche the inner freedom that enabled him to be able to play so freely in the world was his complete realization of the emptiness of all phenomena, his unshakable understanding that everything arising in his field of experience was the play of the energy of his own primordial state. In other words, his profound inner seriousness manifested outwardly in his living his life with an utterly confident, spontaneous playfulness. Of course, this is just a subjective impression that I formed from observing Rinpoche closely in his life and then more recently watching the videos I shot while travelling with him. Others who were close to Rinpoche and knew him well may have formed other impressions. I can only speak for myself, and I do so accepting that I may be wrong. But it seems to me that it was because Rinpoche recognized everything arising in the field of his experience as the play of the energy of the primordial state, his natural condition that he was able to simultaneously carry out so many activities in the world with such precision and to carry such great responsibility so lightly. Noboo Rinpoche's life was a life of commitment to others. His whole life was a mudra of commitment. By mudra, I mean here, rather than just a shape made with the hands in a ritual, a complete gesture made with one's whole being. Rinpoche's life was a mudra made in fulfillment of his vow to live for the benefit of all beings, a fundamental aspect of his samaya. But while one might see a spiritual commitment or a sacred vow in terms of it being a binding obligation and thus as something very heavy, it seems to me that a major part of the total gesture of Rinpoche's commitment, his mudra of samaya, was lived out in the playfulness with which he fulfilled many of his obligations. As I see it, this playfulness in action was what enabled him to do so much with such grace. He was able to offer personal advice to so many people, to give so many profound teachings for so many years, to found and manage so many centers in so many different countries with different laws and customs, and at the same time to write so many books because he could do it all playfully. But while the profound seriousness of Rinpoche's commitment to the Dzogchen teachings and to bringing those teachings to others is rightly always commented on in written accounts of his life, it seems to me that the extraordinary playfulness that accompanied his seriousness can tend to be overlooked when people write about Rinpoche, and that's why I'm making a point of focusing on it here. In due course, I plan to edit, color correct, and create audio commentary for the video footage that I shot in different parts of the world, so that the videos can be enjoyed by others, and perhaps others seeing the video will also be reminded of Rinpoche's playfulness in action. But in the meantime, the best I can do as part of my own mudra of samaya is to share with you some of the screenshots that I've recently made as a way to renew the bond of deep sacred trust that we individually and collectively share with each other through our own and others' connection to Noboo Rinpoche. But rather than including screenshots from video recorded in several different countries, I want to focus on footage that I shot in one place. And in honor of Noboo Rinpoche's country of origin, the screenshots I've chosen to include here are taken from video I recorded during the 4 months that I spent traveling in Tibet in 1987 with Rinpoche and a small group of his other students. At that time, after years of there being either no possibility of traveling at all in Tibet, or there only being the possibility of traveling in Tibet with the constant supervision of a government official as a guide, the possibility of traveling freely in Tibet opened up for a short while, and during our 4 months in Tibet, we were able to travel wherever we wanted, without a tourist guide or an official supervising us. For Rinpoche, despite the fact that there was an element of sadness for him in seeing his native country in the difficult situation in which he found it when he returned there, it was a carefree, joyful time. A time during which he renewed his contact with family members and friends who had remained living in Tibet, and a time in which he also renewed his connection with the culture of his native land, renewing in particular his connection with one of the most important sacred places associated with many of the spiritual traditions of which he was such a great exponent, Samye Monastery, the first Buddhist monastery that was founded and built in Tibet in the years 775 to 779 AD with the assistance of Padmasambhava himself, otherwise known, of course, as Guru Rinpoche, the archetype of the precious master, who was the source of many lineages of teaching and practice. My hope, my playful hope, is that looking at the sequences of images included with this article will, however briefly, give you the feeling that you were there at Samye in 1987 along with Norbu Rinpoche, and that if you do experience that feeling, it will give you a renewed sense of your deep, sacred connection to Norbu Rinpoche and to his other students, whoever they may be and wherever they may be around the world, and that in this way, the mudra of Samaya in your own life will be renewed. Inspired by the example of Norbu Rinpoche's life of service to others, I wrote this poem of aspiration in which I make a commitment to continue to carry out, to the best of my ability, my vocation as a poet and practitioner in the face of the many difficulties that we are all encountering in the world today. Deep and ancient wounds of colonization and slavery scar our nation's history, and I cannot hope to heal them all. Yet I swear I will make my contribution, no matter that it might be small. I will raise my hands to work for the common good. I will raise my voice to sing. And though mine may be a lone voice crying in the wilderness, still I will offer up my song for whatever blessings it might bring. There is so much confusion in this land, so great there seems to be no end, and I have seen the hunger in children's eyes turn brother against brother and friend against friend. But I swear we can find another way to solve the problems we all face today. And I believe in my heart I myself can change so that I can help to make a start to end the conflicts keeping us apart. I will raise my hands to work for the common good. I will raise my voice to sing, and though mine may be a lone voice crying in the wilderness, still I will offer up my song for whatever blessings it might bring. Some say for those like you and me there can be no salvation. They say we have brought upon ourselves our poverty and our misery, and that we are the cause of our own downfall and damnation. But what I say is that those words are lies of those who would not have us even try to change our nation's situation. Their words are like poison in our ears that serve no purpose but to add to our fears, and I will not listen to them. I will raise my hands to work for the common good. I will raise my voice to sing, and though mine may be a lone voice crying in the wilderness, still I will offer up my song for whatever blessings it might bring. For so long now, staring poverty in the face, we have had to make the best of the bread of our affliction. So many diseases have destroyed our communities together with alcoholism and addiction. I know there is no easy way to get from where we are today to where we need to be, but still I pledge my heart and soul to the journey towards our destiny, even though our final goal may be something I myself may not be blessed to live long enough to see. I will raise my hands to work for the common good. I will raise my voice to sing, and though mine may be a lone voice crying in the wilderness, still I will offer up my song for whatever blessings it might bring.